From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Redwood City.
Belmont. Midtown.
San Jose.
19th Avenue. San Francisco.
San Mateo.
Sunnyvale. Coming up, local reaction to George Zimmerman's acquittal in the shooting death of Florida teenager Trayvon Martin.
It's waking up another generation of African-American youth.
And we'll meet the minister who leads memorial services for San Francisco residents at risk of being forgotten.
It's important that we can offer comfort and an opportunity for healthy grief for those who are the survivors.
Death in the Tenderloin. Also, we'll hear from Richmond Mayor Gail McLaughlin about her city's radical plan to help homeowners drowning in debt.
The greed that started this problem cannot fix this problem. They do not have a solution.
Extending a helping hand today on Cross Currents. Over the past few days, protesters on both sides of the bay have joined thousands nationally in expressing outrage over George Zimmerman's acquittal in Florida. Over the weekend, more than 500 people gathered at Oakland's Frank Ogawa Plaza. While some violence and vandalism broke out on Saturday night, Sunday's demonstration was mostly peaceful. Protesters rallied, then marched through residential neighborhoods in West Oakland, supported by cars honking and cheers from bystanders. One group of soccer players even broke up their game to join the march. Emeka Okbama is one of those who joined spontaneously.
We are playing soccer. But the way I felt, I have to join the rally. There's no way I can play soccer and see something like this going on. I'm a human being. I don't want anybody to kill myself.
Abdul Malik Ali is a member of East Oakland's African-American Muslim community. He said he saw the case as an opportunity to build a bigger movement for his community.
It's waking up another generation of African-American youth, and already the Muslim community is already being woken up, you know what I'm saying, with this atmosphere of Islamophobia. But now when you have situations like this, now you have black youth starting to wake up.
Oakland resident Carol Jones was fearful for her children.
I'm scared. I don't want him to go nowhere. I fear for his life. I'm very overprotective. I have a 23-year-old, and I harbor him, too. And it's like, they was like, Carol, you got to let go and let God. I understand that. I say, but if I slip one time, it might be his time. So I'm not going to let go. I'm going to let God, but I'm not going to let go.
And thanks to KALW's Kyung-Jin Lee for bringing us those voices from Oakland. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Though Trayvon Martin lived in Florida, his death has affected people all over the country. We'll go now to a place much closer to home, where a small group of people tries to make sure the dead are not forgotten, no matter what they suffered in their lives. Nearly every city in the U.S. has a neighborhood like San Francisco's Tenderloin. Ours is home to a dozen social service agencies, low-rent single-room occupancy hotels, or SROs, and the thousands of people who live in them. For many residents, life in the Tenderloin is marked by death, often premature death, from things like HIV/AIDS, heart disease, and drug overdoses.
I went to this hotel, and the social worker there was almost in tears, and she said, oh, it would just break my heart if no one comes, and no one came. It was the two of us, but we had a memorial for the person who had died.
For more than three decades, Reverend Glenda Hope has officiated memorials in the Tenderloin for people who might otherwise be forgotten. In 2004, she asked the neighborhood paper, the Central City Extra, to begin covering those memorials. And since then, the Extra's reporters have written more than 200 obituaries. This year, they were anthologized into a book called Death in the Tenderloin. The book includes obituaries and photos, as well as analysis, essays on the neighborhood's health conditions, poverty, and crime. It's all based on the meticulous work that the Extra's reporters have done. KALW's Laura Flynn accompanied Extra reporter Marjorie Beggs to the memorial of Randy Givens. The first voice you'll hear is Givens' neighbor, SRO resident Otto Duffy, followed by Beggs.
People get stuck. They get stuck in these units for the rest of their life. This is like the Hotel California. You can check in, but you can never get out. Once you're in for life. however long that might be.
Randy Givens lived at the Ritz Hotel for 2 decades and had many visitors over the years, but according to social worker Heather Vaness, he didn't socialize much with fellow residents. That's why his memorial was so lightly attended by neighbors. Only Thanapa Simphanth and Otto Duffy showed up for his February 21 send-off.
I really miss him, and I think memorial is really important, and nobody came. And when I saw Otto, I said, you don't have to go anywhere. You come here for a few minutes, please.
Yeah, it was really sad. Because Thanapa, my neighbor, came in and said, come on out. You got to come to this memorial. I'm not an early riser. There's nobody there at all. There's only a reporter, the minister, and the social worker. There's nobody actually there who knew Randy. Not one person.
Despite the small turnout, Mr. Givens' life emerged as extraordinarily full, productive, and active, filled with loving family, political colleagues, and intellectual and artistic accomplishments. He died February 6th in his room at the Ritz. He was 71 years old.
Central City Extra reporter Marjorie Begg sits at her desk next to expansive windows overlooking busy Market Street. Silver hair dusts her shoulders, a few strands pinned back away from her glasses. Randy Givens' memorial is one of many she's covered over the years. Thinking for a moment, she recalls another. This one took place a few blocks away in the intimate listening room at the Ambassador Hotel.
There were probably 25 people there. It was a very small room that it was held in, and they were actually flowing out the door to stand and pay their respects and listen to what was going on.
Speedy, as he was known, had many friends in the SRO. When I walk down there, I meet one, Edmund Juicy. He remembers hearing news of Speedy's death.
He was a very, like a cowboy, Navy guy, very grandfatherly and brotherly to us people who live in SRO tenants. And then I remember several others just screaming like, no, 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 not Speedy, no. Because I had just seen Speedy one day ago before that happened. And I mean, it told me that so many people had a special bond with him, because a lot of time in the SRO hotels you don't know a person that much. We don't see each other, but so many people had feelings to let out. It showed that he was definitely connected to a lot of people.
Marjorie Begg says that memorial was one of the most emotional she's ever attended.
This was a person who's actually started crying at the memorial, because he said that for 2 nights after Speedy died, he wasn't able to sleep, he wasn't able to close his eyes, he was really fearing for his own mortality.
Memorials convene wherever there's space, in community rooms, kitchens, lobbies, and other common spaces in the Tenderloin's roughly 24 SROs. No recording is allowed. No video, no sound, no photos. Reverend Glenda Hope officiates most of the memorials.
We give to the poorest among us that final dignity which all of us hope will be given to us.
She began holding the memorials more than 35 years ago, through her nonprofit called Network Ministries. She delivers services in a minister's traditional garb, a clerical collar, black slacks and shirt over her slight frame, a cross with a peace sign always rests on her chest.
It's important that we can offer comfort and an opportunity for healthy grief and healing for those who are the survivors, and that we communicate to the survivors that when they die, their deaths also will be noted and will be mourned.
She asks everyone in attendance to close their eyes and reflect on the life of the departed. She reads a short scripture passage, then opens the floor up for anyone who wants to speak.
All these memorials end with Glenda asking everybody to stand around in a circle and hold hands. And that's always a very touching moment. And then she asks everyone to then turn and give your neighbor the sign of peace, which is a hug. So everybody ends up hugging.
Like Marjorie Baggs, Central City Extra reporter Tom Carter has attended hundreds of these memorials. Both say that at this point, they're as much participants as anyone else.
We hold hands at the end. We don't sit on the outside. We usually sit in the inner circle with the people who are talking, so we really do feel that we're part of the memorial, even though we're taking notes and nobody else is.
Carter and Baggs like to do their work while it's fresh in their minds. After each memorial, they rush back to the Market Street office to write their testimonials of the deceased.
Raymond Tony Pugliese was a lot of things, a motorcycle gang member, a bodybuilder, a fix-it man, an entrepreneur, a drug addict, and an alcohol abuser. But to a special few, he was the godfather of the Empress Hotel. When someone he knew told him they had a need, Pugliese had invited them to his fourth floor room for an appointment. The room was cluttered with nuts and bolts and little tools and crates of gadgets, plus a dozen cell phones and landmine phones too for his businesses, as he called his jack-of-all-trades enterprise.
Rose Ridolfi generated strong emotions in everyone who knew her, and she had acquaintances throughout the Tenderloin. I knew her for 2 decades, said Reverend Glenda Hope, who officiated at Ridolfi's memorial at the Franciscan Hotel. I have to say, I wasn't surprised at her passing, but I thought she'd always be around. She was like the little girl who had a curl. When she was good, she was very, very good, but when she was bad, she was horrid. We can talk about Rose like that, Hope added. People tell the truth in the Tenderloin memorials, that we're all a mix of good and bad.
Temperamental Louis O. Guzman likely got more respect at his memorial than he got in his 14 years living in the Turk Eddy preservation apartments. Cantankerous and combative, he was difficult to be around. He constantly complained and swore and tried to hustle his fellow residents for money. Quote, I told him once, Mr. Guzman, you can't go out on the street talking that way to people. You'll get beat up or killed, said manager Patsy Gardner. She said he shot back, that's why I've got this cane, unquote.
Carter says, in addition to providing closure, the obituaries illuminate daily life in the Tenderloin.
Well, it says that it's a real hard place to live and even harder place to die, and that for the most part, people are very glad to die inside, not on the street. So we're glad to document that.
Before long, the reporters will have another memorial to attend and another obituary to write to remind us that the dead once lived. In the Tenderloin, I'm Laura Flynn for Cross Currents.
To find out more about the book Death in the Tenderloin, visit our website. It's kalw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Whether it's a single room in a hotel, a two-bedroom apartment, or a five-bedroom house, we all need a place to call home. And despite news of national real estate market recovery, many California homeowners are having trouble holding on to theirs. Almost 30% of California homeowners are underwater. That means they owe more on the mortgage than the house is currently worth. And it's the first step on the slippery slope to foreclosure. The city of Richmond was hit hard when the housing bubble burst. About 12,000 homeowners there are underwater. That's roughly half of all mortgage holders in the city. Richmond City Council recently approved a radical new plan to use eminent domain to buy underwater mortgages and resell them to beleaguered homeowners at lower prices. Mayor Gail McLaughlin came into KALW's studio to talk more about her city's audacious new plan.
Well, simply put, this is the city buying mortgages that are likely to end up in foreclosure and negotiating new mortgages so that homeowners can afford them and stay in their homes. We do this with the help of our lending partner, Mortgage Resolution Partners, and they fund the purchase of the, let me make this clear, purchase of the mortgage. And we do not purchase the house itself. We purchase the mortgage. The homeowner stays in the house. If the lender will not sell the house at fair market value, which is what the city is offering to pay for it.
Who's setting that fair market value?
The MRP, does the assessment or the works through the formula to
MRP is market rate.
Market Resolution Partners, our funding partners. So they set the fair market value, and the banks and lenders have an opportunity to sell it to us. If they don't, we the city take the mortgage through eminent domain. And again, we pay a fair market price when we take it that way as well. But this is in the interest of all our residents because it helps us build a local economy. What we do is take that mortgage once we have purchased it or taken it by eminent domain, and we renegotiate a loan for the homeowner. This again with the help of our funding partner, and then we give the mortgage back to the homeowner. We do this mainly through FHA, or this is how the plan will be implemented. We're in the very early stages of it.
So, FHA is the Federal Housing Authority?
Right, yes. So the city takes the purchases the loan either through a voluntary or purchase or through eminent domain. Then a new loan is negotiated for the homeowner, and then the city's mortgage pretty much can be torn up, and the homeowner has its new renegotiated mortgage at reduced principal and reduced payments.
And what motivated you to take this approach rather than to let individual homeowners deal with this, renegotiate on their own?
Well, the fact is that the renegotiating on their own with banks is not working. There's a very small number of homeowners that have gotten reset principals. The city has tried to help. Nonprofits have tried to help. But this is a failure in outcome nationwide in terms of working directly with the banks, working directly with any federal programs that have not brought much relief. So this is our attempt, and we think it's great for other cities as well, to really intervene to reverse the economic freefall that we see happening. While some neighborhoods have had some increase in property values, many are still suffering greatly. And in Richmond, these neighborhoods are feeling the outcome of a greedy banking system. Many of these families have had predatory loans. And
what's a predatory loan?
A predatory loan is a subprime loan based on increased rent, interest, and bubble principles. It's a situation that many families were brought into, thinking they were getting a good deal, and their wonderful American dream was truly going to happen. And of course, the fine print and the lack of explanation to them by the bankers who were truly just pulling the wool over their eyes left families in bad straits, and they were hit really bad by the housing crisis.
And these subprime mortgages and loans were particularly targeted to residents,
yes,
in cities like Richmond.
Absolutely.
Low-income people of color.
Absolutely. Targeted subprime loans, particularly low-income communities, but also particularly people of color. And Richmond is predominantly African-American and Latino, and these families in our community have suffered greatly as a result of this.
Gail McLaughlin is the mayor of Richmond, and she's talking about that city's radical idea to stem the foreclosure crisis. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. So you're in the very early stages of this, and we'll be watching how it works in Richmond. And I know other cities are also watching this. What kind of reception and questions have you gotten? Some other cities who thought about doing something similar to this have backed away because of fear of repercussions from banks, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the response in Richmond has been, you know, incredibly positive. People understand this will benefit the community as a whole because neighborhoods will, you know, become more thriving, more stable. People have money in their pockets to spend on local businesses. Businesses will prosper and can expand, create jobs. So we think this, I think people understand this is good for us. Other cities have been threatened, as we have as well, by the servicers, the lenders that are trying to threaten us away by saying this is, you know, not legal, when we know, in fact, that this has been vetted very, very closely by lawyers. And the city is held totally indemnified. The company, our funding company, is taking on all the legal costs should we get should this be brought to?
Do you expect to be sued?
Well, you know, it's left to be seen. But we do know that that there is the legality of this has been clearly vetted by lawyers all over, including our city attorney, but by specialists in the field, economists and others.
I do wonder, though, if there's a fear that if you have to resort to eminent domain, that there's likely to be lots of lawsuits and that you could get the whole city tangled up in lawsuits. Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is the city, again, does not pay one iota of cost for any legal action that may be taken. MRP pays for anything, for everything and anything. And we believe that some banks are going to cooperate with this, and we believe that some of them may indeed voluntarily sell at fair market price the mortgage to the city, and that's what we want.
And you're with the Green Party. You took over as mayor. You were elected mayor of Richmond in 2006, and you felt like you were making all kinds of progress in the city, mm-hmm. really a big reduction in crime over the last 8 years, a mm-hmm. Lot of green policies instituted, and you say that it's this crisis really precipitated stalling that progress.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the stalling of progress all over the country occurred. We in Richmond were on such a forward swing of you know, health and progress in our city. You know, we certainly had to struggle hard to keep it in place, and we did, and we have had continued progress slowly, you know, but we know what we're doing in Richmond, and we saw this housing crisis, which precipitated really the whole economic crisis, really threaten us to stop this wonderful progressive direction we're in. But we're finding ways to intervene as in this particular program and get and continue to play a leading role for other cities, which are coming around. El Mundo is looking at this, as well as Los Puentes and North Las Vegas and Seattle and Newark. There's a couple cities have backed away. But, you know, the majority that I've heard about are starting to look at this very seriously.
And you're hoping that Richmond may start a movement.
Absolutely. A national movement is what is needed. The lenders, the banks, the greed that started this problem cannot fix this problem. They do not have a solution. I've met with some of these servicers who are representing the banks, and they have clearly not been able to state, not even articulate a solution, much less implement one. So we in Richmond are showcasing that we are willing to provide a solution, and we think it is taking off nationally and needs to continue to, because a solution is really needed for our economy as a whole in this country to thrive and prosper and stabilize. With many, many people suffering still, it is not going to stabilize. It's going to still be a crisis that that everybody suffers from.
Do you have an underwater mortgage? How did you handle it? And what do you think about Richmond's plan? You can let us know at 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, or you can join the discussion on Facebook. We are KALW. And
And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Tiffany Kamhai, Lisa Carmack, Jen Chien, Leela Day, Ben DeLuca, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Teddy Lederer, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Nina Gensler-Debs, Brooke Welty, Angela Johnston, Ben Vu, Marco Choi, and Megan Quintana. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Happy 40th birthday! Also, thanks to you, KALW is independent, listener-supported public radio. If you like your rock and roll straight, you may want to show up at San Francisco's Café du Nord Friday night when local band Down and Outlaws performs. Down and Outlaws, who you're hearing now, describes their sound as unadulterated rock and roll made with absolutely no traces of indie or lo-fi. They'll be the first band of the evening, starting about 9:30 p.m. All of that information, along with more local bands, is at KALW.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. My mother would be ashamed. My mother would.